So it is something that is catching the public attention. If you go now into chapters, you will find that a whole table is dedicated just to books relating to this. There are these books, plus books written about the book. Secrets of the Code by Dan Bernstein. The Da Vinci Code Decoded by Martin Lund. The Gospel Code by Ben Retherington. And The Truth and Fiction, Truth and Fiction in the Da Vinci Code by Bart Ehrman. And these are only some of the books. So you can see books are being written about the book. It has become then a very important book. Now why is it catching the public attention like this? A few points. In the fictional telling here of the story, the author is promoting a few ideas which are becoming now popular ideas. And we should understand this. As a person involved in dawah, I'm very interested in what makes the public tick. I want to know what ideas are attractive to people. I want to know what they're thinking. So we know how to present the message to them. If you understand what means something to them, you can show them how Islam is meaningful to them. We can also understand something about the challenges that we face as Muslims living in the midst of a modern popular culture. You have to know what are some of the ideas that your children, for example, will be privy to. What are some of the ideas that could confuse their minds? You have to be able to explain these things to them. So someone comes and says, well, it looks like Jesus was married and he left progeny. Now that may not mean much to Muslims, because if he was married and if he had progeny, he would just be like so many other prophets who married and had progeny. That would not affect anything crucial that Muslims believe in. Of course, it would affect what Christians believe in, because if Jesus is the Son of God and he has a daughter, then that will be the granddaughter of God. And then you can see that there are difficulties here that makes people pay attention to this book. But we have to be aware of some of the other ideas. For example, this book promotes the idea that goddess worship is a good thing. In fact, the book ends when the primary character in the book eventually finds himself bowing down. He falls to his knees just before a pyramid under which he believes Mary Magdalene to be buried. And he even thinks he hears Mary Magdalene's voice coming up from within the tomb. So when one gets to that point, if one is hooked by the book, one is also hooked to the idea that worshipping the goddesses of old is a good thing. In fact, he promotes this idea. And the idea becomes popular. It's one of the reasons why his book is selling. Many people have become dissatisfied with what they call patriarchal religion. And they classify Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all together as being representative of this. They see that in these religions, women are generally subjugated. They have very little say, whether it be in the church, in the synagogue, in the mosque, in the leadership. They see that sometimes the women are denied their rights. And they want to react to that by going to the other extreme. Now, this problem was especially noteworthy in Christianity, because in Christianity, you have God being the father, but not mother. God has a son, but not a daughter. And the priest had to be a male priest because he was representing Christ, who was a male, and so on. So the problem was compounded. People had to pray to God as the father, as opposed to just simply praying to God as Muslims do. And so women had severe obstacles to deal with. Plus, when we look at the way that in which women are represented in the Bible, sometimes there are passages that really makes your eyebrow raise. And you wonder, is this really what was originally intended, or did people later on write it in like this? So because of the manner in which women were represented, particularly in Christianity, now the popular culture wants to let the pendulum swing the other way and celebrate femininity. Glorify women. Talk about the greatness of women. And one of the things they're thinking about is that it looks like what has happened in the Judeo-Christian tradition is that God has become decidedly male. So let's look for the feminine. Let's let God be a woman for a change. So now, they go back to ancient forms of worship. They find artifacts. And, of course, ancient people worship anything that seemed to be directly related to physical life. So they looked at the sun. The sun helps life. So worship the sun. Water is essential to life, so worship the rivers. Women give birth, so worship women. Worship especially the women in the pregnant form. So you might find many ancient artifacts of goddesses, especially pregnant women depicted as goddesses. People worship the cow because the cow became very important for people. You utilize every part of the cow. You drink the milk and the child can survive on a cow's milk just like the child can survive on the mother's milk. So worship the cow. People worshipped anything that was directly related to life. In ancient times, people worshipped goddesses. And now this book is promoting forms of religion that worship goddesses. And so that is all worked into the story. So even though it is a fictional representation, you find the main characters in the story whom you're supposed to respect, again and again emphasizing that worshipping the sacred feminine is very important. And now, another part of it is that people have become dissatisfied with the Catholic Church. Now, this book is a severe criticism of the Catholic Church. People have become dissatisfied on a number of points. Many people, for example, lately have become quite disheartened with the Catholic Church after we heard stories breaking up from one quarter after another, showing that the altar boys were sexually molested by their priests. And so sometimes there were attempts made to cover up this sort of happening. So now this is highlighted in the book. Here is the church. This is what the church has been doing. How can you respect a church that does that? Now, starting with some things which are known, now the book goes to things which are to be proved and just simply assumes the things which are to be proved. You see, there's a certain psychology for writer tells you, look, you see this thing and you know that to be true, but look what else is true. By the time you agree with him on what you know to be true, he slips in something else which you didn't know to be true, but which you will nevertheless accept because he's already won your confidence. And so because of the problems which are known with the Catholic Church, what the authors try to say now, see, just as the Catholic Church has been covering up certain things, such as the abuse of the altar boys, they have also been covering up the fact that the earliest form of Christianity involved the worship of the feminine. And that is what we need now to restore as the original and true Christianity. Now, that, of course, is historically incorrect. That has not been the original and true form of Christianity. Some of this can be noted in the Gnostic Gospels. But as I've already pointed out, the Gnostic Gospels are not the earliest of the Gospels to be written. These are writings that came in the Nag Hammadi scrolls, discovered in 1945, but they date from the second century of Christianity. They are not from the original disciples of Jesus. Now, the story goes on to try and emphasize that there are secret societies that kept alive the knowledge of Jesus. And conspiracy theories and secret societies, these are the stuff of legend, and these are the things that fuel human curiosity. Everybody wants to know something about the Knights Templars, about the Freemasons, about the Priory of Sion, as he speaks about here, and about secret societies who have kept some secret knowledge. But as it turns out, there is no secret knowledge to be revealed. In fact, the whole story takes the form of the characters looking for the secret knowledge, the Da Vinci Code, to solve it, to reveal that secret knowledge to the world. And eventually, as they come to the end of the story, there is nothing to be shown. It's almost like the Ark of Noah. If you read any book that says that they have discovered the Ark of Noah, they will tell you about somebody who had the photographs, and that person, by the time he got to him, the person had died. And the photographs could not be found, but we knew that he had the photograph because somebody said they saw him with the photograph, and so on. So you always go to dead-end links that do not actually arrive at anything concrete. When you thought you were solving one clue after another to eventually come to the final place where it is said that the remains of Mary Magdalene are buried, together with documents which will verify the fact that Mary Magdalene's descendants are the true inheritors of the teachings of Jesus and not the Catholic Church, Eventually, we arrive at a church in Glasgow, and it is discovered that it's not here. But then it is somewhere else. And why is it somewhere else? Without any valid proof or any solid evidence, the main character just simply satisfies himself that that is the place. He finally goes to the pyramid, and he falls on his knees, and he is worshipping Mary Magdalene. So now, in sum, we have here a fictional representation, a story about Jesus, taking the form as though it is fact. And it is presented in such a way that it is gripping the readership. It's creating a phenomenon so that books have to be written about this book, and eventually there's going to be a movie about it. It is essential that we know something about this book. We know something about its fictional representation. We understand that it is that what it presents as history, where it mingles in some history in the story, much of that itself is not actually historical. Some of it is true, some of it is not. What it needs to support its main point, or its main points, are not true. It is not true to say that Isa alayhi salam was married to Mary Magdalene. And although it does not affect the faith of Muslims to believe that he was married, there is no evidence to show that he was married. There are some clues that a certain woman was close to him in the New Testament, but that is not sufficient to show that he was married. In fact, not even the Nag Hammadi scrolls that were discovered show that Mary was married to Jesus. There is some indication again, but nothing conclusive. And so to say that Mary was married to Jesus, that they had children, and that this was covered up for centuries, this is really to ask us to believe too much. It's too much to ask us to believe, and we should not believe such things without any clear evidence. To say that goddess worship was the earliest form of Christianity is also a blatant lie. There is no such evidence that any such thing transpired. As far as we know, Christianity began as a Jewish sect, and the main difference between this Jewish sect and the others was that this Jewish sect felt that the Messiah has come, and that is Jesus. They continue to worship like other Jews. They prayed in the same synagogue. They worship the same God. That is the God of the Old Testament, the one who is called Yahweh in the Hebrew, and is called Elohim in the Hebrew, or Elo for short, and is called Allah in the English translations of the Bible. The one true God who says, "Before me no God was formed, nor shall there be after me. I am God, and besides me there is no other." That is the only God that is worshipped. In the New Testament, the documents collected about Isa alayhi salam in the Bible, we find the same thing, that the earliest Christians are worshipping only one God. That is the God of their ancestors, the God of Abraham and Jacob and of Moses. That again is not a male or a female God, it's just simply God who created all males and females. There is no record that the earliest Christians in fact worshipped a goddess. And to pretend that one is now recovering the earliest form of Christianity, which the Catholic Church here sought to put on the ground, is really to put forward here a blatant lie. The book does have some points of merit, especially from the point of view of Islam. One perhaps might be encouraged to find that there are certain points which, and I will close with this very quickly, the book does admit some of the failings of the Catholic Church, some of the ways in which they have departed indeed from the teachings of Jesus, some of the ways in which the gospel material was written very late and collected into the New Testament at a very late date. I know that some questions will arise from this, and I'll be glad to answer your question, inshallah, after the prayer and after we have a chance to hear from our beloved brother, Abdul Sabri. But I'll pass the mic for the moment back to the MC, and he will encourage us to stay for the evening and inform us about where we go from here.